Ladies and gentlemen, step right up.
January 20th, 2017 will be remembered as the day the people became the rulers of this nation again. We assembled here today are issuing a new decree to be heard in every city, in every foreign capital, and in every hall of power. From this day forward, a new vision will govern our land. From this day forward, it's going to be only America first. We do not seek to impose our way of life on anyone, but rather to let it shine as an example. We will shine for everyone to follow. There should be no fear. We are protected, and we will always be protected. We will be protected by the great men and women of our military and law enforcement. And most importantly, we will be protected by God. We stand at the birth of a new millennium, ready to unlock the mysteries of space, to free the earth from the miseries of disease, and to harness the energies, industries, and technologies of tomorrow. A new national pride will stir our souls, lift our sights, and heal our divisions. Your voice, your hopes, and your dreams will define our American destiny. Together, we will make America strong again. We will make America wealthy again. We will make America proud again. We will make America safe again. And yes, together, we will make America great again. Thank you, God bless you, and God bless America.
Let's go see our first. When I'm a roll on a honey.
This is Christopher Hart with the American Adversaries Second Helping Podcast, where we give you a taste of our American Adversaries radio show, which airs live in Central Florida at 5 p.m. Eastern Time, Sunday through Friday. You can listen on the station's website, theanswerorlando.com, on our website, live or from the archive, americanadversaries.com, and the same with our Rumble channel, American Adversaries. On Monday's show, our man in Jerusalem, Abe Katzman, joined Laurie Cardoza-Moore, Rick Brown, and me to discuss the Iran hostage ransom deal and other issues affecting Israel. Abe, before we get started, I haven't seen an F-35 laying around anywhere over there, have you?
No. Well, there are a couple of squadrons of them, but I haven't seen anywhere they aren't supposed to be.
Okay. All right. Anyway, happy Rosh Hashanah. You're 5,784.
Thank you
very much. Yeah. How about that?
Woohoo! Happy New Year.
That's right. Happy New Year.
How peaceful or how violent was it?
Well, the holiday itself went over pretty quietly, but although it's the first time I remember, maybe it had happened many times before, I don't know, but I was a little surprised that the police basically made a request that any licensed gun owner be packing when they go to synagogue. Everybody should carry.
Wow.
And they're certainly concerned. There was a bomb attack thwarted just before the holiday. Unfortunately, today there were three attacks, or at least three attempted attacks, two shootings, one stabbing. A couple of vehicles were hit, but army vehicles, but no wounded. No wounded soldiers or Israeli civilians.
Thank God.
The reports are that a couple of the terrorists were neutralized. But that can mean a lot of things.
Yeah, let's hope permanently. Was this concentrated in any particular area, or is it just sort of spread around?
Well, it was mostly on the kind of the edges of Jerusalem. One was at one of the crossings, the checkpoints between sort of West Bank and Israel proper, along outside of Jerusalem. A couple of others were within the West Bank. I think one was at an army base or at some army vehicles. I'm not sure. You know, the details tend to stand out much more when the attacks are successful. So I'm glad I don't know them. And also, there is all of a sudden there's a new bunch of riots from Gaza along the border fence that are being you know, they assume Hamas is sending people out there.
Is there anything they're particularly rioting over, or just to be doing it?
Nothing new.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Just a way of life.
It's another, you know, it's like those days of rage. I always like when they have the day of rage.
Any difference in the intensity? Is any of that in celebration of this Iranian deal?
Well, I'll tell you one thing. Okay. It is, and this is something that Israel has taken note of. There are a couple of anniversaries here. One, last week, we actually had the 50th anniversary of the signing of the Oslo Agreement. So that, you know, that could be one thing. And then coming up this week, you know, we have Yom Kippur coming up next Monday, Sunday night and Monday. And this is the 50th year since the Yom Kippur War.
Oh boy!
Yeah.
All right. Well, yeah. That guideline to pack might just be extended, shall we say? Just keep it in place for a while. Abe. So Prime Minister Netanyahu has come to the United States, making his way, I presume, to New York City for the UN General Assembly. But he started out on the West Coast, meeting today with Elon Musk. And what's that? What is he meeting with Musk for?
Well, I think he's meeting with him. The understanding is that he's meeting with him for a couple of reasons. One, I think he thinks, I'm guessing, that Musk is the kind of person who sees or who would see the tremendous economic technological possibilities of investing in Israel. I think would encourage him to do so and probably roll out the red carpet for him if he decided to come. At the same time, you know, there are these accusations, because everybody likes to make accusations, whether founded or not, that Musk has been dabbling in anti-Semitism. Not so much that he's been dabbling in it, but that the amount of anti-Semitic material on Twitter has increased since he has taken over. Now, look, the amount of anti-Semitic material in the world has increased since Musk took over Twitter. So I'm not sure if how much blame we can lay at his feet. Some of it may have to do with just the censoring. Not everything censored. Even if you're against censorship, doesn't mean that everything censored should not be. You know, it should be out there. I'm not advocating censoring it, but there's a lot of bad stuff and a lot of bad actors. And when certain things are being censored, those types of people get quieted down a bit, along with all the Republicans and conservatives and people who didn't like the mask mandates and the vaccine requirements.
But
they took care of some anti-Semitism at the same time. So
I find it ironic that they are complaining about that when you just mentioned them censoring conservatives. It seemed to me that prior to Elon Musk, that Twitter and Facebook were far better at censoring conservative speech rather than anti-Semitic speech. You follow what I'm trying to say here, Abe?
Yeah. Sure.
So who are they to speak? Who are they to talk at this point?
Right.
Right. But anything to criticize the prime minister. And I understand that the The protesters, Lori, were you telling?
Yeah, I'm reading about the protesters that there are a bunch of groupy protesters that are going to be following Bibi Netanyahu around as he comes to the United States for the meetings next week. And they're going to be protesting him from the land and from the sea.
And I guess he had something to say about them, too, which is also now controversial, Abe.
Yeah, he said that these protesters, and I think he's referring specifically to people protesting abroad, outside mm-hmm. of Israel.
Right.
And he said that with what they're doing and what they're saying, they are serving the agenda of the PLO and Iran and Israel's enemies.
Mm-hmm.
And the protesters responded by saying that Netanyahu has given a declaration of war, made a declaration of war against United States Jews. You know, it's just, it doesn't matter how ridiculous it is. They can come out and make statements like that and mm-hmm. say that, he is putting the lives of Jews worldwide at risk. It's just so over the top. And they seem to, I don't know, they don't, it doesn't seem to stop them. The more extreme they are, it's like the more attention they get from it. Michael Oren, by the way, who was Israel's ambassador to the U.S. In the early 2000s, or 2010s, I guess, mm-hmm. before Ron Dermer, he was the ambassador. He made an interesting observation. He said that he believes the protesters see themselves as having the support of the Biden administration and the Democratic Party.
Well,
yeah.
I would say that's a pretty valid assumption mm-hmm. for them to make.
I think so.
Because actually they've gotten money via these NGOs from our State Department.
Our State Department is funding this mess.
I mean, it's pretty hard to not think that, I would think. But now, I want to go back to these accusations about Prime Minister Netanyahu, basically him threatening Jewish lives. Isn't that just sort of a hop and a skip away from saying that he is himself anti-Semitic? Right?
Let's put it this way. If that is the next logical step that they, the logical leap they may make, sure, why not? They could easily say that. They can say anything, no matter how preposterous. They could say that.
Yeah,
if you can say that he's declared war against U.S. Jews, and how ludicrous a statement is that? And people report it with a straight face.
They do indeed. Now, President Trump, I guess yesterday in a Truth Social post, made some comments of his own, I guess in a roundabout way, sort of similar to what Prime Minister Netanyahu. Now, Netanyahu was talking about protesters in particular here in the United States that are going to be dogging him. But Trump was talking about, I think, what he called liberal Jews in the United States. And he was asking for them to repent and leave the Democrat Party because they have been led astray and have been voting for people who are destroying America and Israel. First of all, did I get that right? And second of all, he's now being accused of being anti-Semitic. Yep. Now he's being accused of being anti.
Well,
go ahead.
Yeah, he is, but it's not the first time. And each time is as illegitimate as the time before. They mm-hmm. only get there by twisting, really warping interpretations and twisting words. In a way, this was kind of, if you step back, it was sort of amusing because here the Rosh Hashanah, the period of Rosh Hashanah to Yom Kippur is known as 10 days of repentance.
Yep.
This is a period long. Where you're supposed to take great mm-hmm. stock in what you've done and work to be a better person in mm-hmm. the coming years and hopefully atone for whatever you've done wrong. So he, along those lines, said that, while he's giving them a pre-Rosh Hashanah greeting, he said, just a quick reminder that the liberal Jews who voted to destroy America and Israel because they believed false narratives,
yeah.
He said, let's hope you learn from your mistake and make better choices moving forward. Mm-hmm. Happy New Year. Now, I happen to think that's kind of funny.
But he was also doing
Trumpian it. In a way. It's his style. That's all.
He was doing it in the spirit of Rosh Hashanah. He was speaking about, you know, the season and time. That's why he said what he said. So I'm getting emails from people on the left side of the spectrum who are saying, you need to say something about Trump and his anti-Semitic comments.
Oh, my gosh. You know, immediately you see the headline. Trump has gone full-on Nazi is one of them.
Yeah.
I just saw a string of them before. And, you know, each one dumber than the next. In terms of, you know, or at least maliciously misrepresenting what this statement was.
Yeah.
And the first thing they do is they say, oh, he also called Nazis very fine people. And he's dabbled in anti-Semitic tropes over the, it's so over the top. I don't think that this statement, offended anybody who was not already offended by Donald Trump.
Right.
And I think in a way all it did was, you know, he likes making the heads of his opponents explode every now and then, and I think he succeeded once again in doing that.
He is quite adept at it, let's just put it that way. Let's talk about the story that's been getting all the attention over here, and that has to do with the prisoner swap. I guess the swap itself was completed today, even though I guess two of the Iranians that were given back to Iran are going to stay in the United States. But the five.
Yeah, what's that about?
Yeah, you can tell me. But now they're released onto our streets, I presume. Right?
Right.
And
yeah.
These were actually criminals. I mean, these were people who were in jail because they belonged in jail, not like, you know, the hostages in Iran, if I'm not mistaken, Abe.
I don't know about all of them. I know that at least a couple of them were there for selling dual-use technology to Iran, for arranging for U.S. businesses to sell material to Iran that ostensibly was for civilian uses but can be used for all kinds of military purposes also.
Yeah.
Those are not people you want running around doing business in the U.S. economy. I don't understand why... Send them back to Iran. What are you doing? Why do you keep them here?
Well, there's a lot of people wondering why they made this deal to begin with. Evidently, it is for $6 billion, although I saw a report over the weekend that it might have been for as much as $16 billion. Had you heard anything along those lines, Abe?
Yeah, the $6 billion was what was frozen in South Korean financial institutions. But there was, I don't know exactly whether they released it, they didn't release it, but there was supposedly on the table at least another $10 billion being held, I think, in Iraq for gas supplies or something like that. Anyway, so they got the cash. Iran supposedly made some nominal gesture of diluting a little bit of enriched uranium to show that was their goodwill gesture here. There's so much wrong with this. To begin with, when Obama was president, he only gave $1.7 million to. For how? What were there? 10 people?
Yeah,
released?
Yeah, $1.7 billion. Yeah,
and now it's $6 billion.
Like a billion,
for, you know, for five, $1.2 billion each, which just shows you how bad inflation is.
I guess.
under the
Bidenomics.
Bidenomics. That's right. By the way, and I haven't seen hardly any reports about this, but the Taliban have evidently taken about 18 hostages. I guess they want to get in on the sweetheart deals. One of them, I believe, an American citizen for teaching Christianity there. And so, hey, it's good money to be made, I guess, right? Why not?
I guess. That easy.
Yeah.
I'm Yeah, I'd kind of like to, you know, I've got a couple of big ticket purchases that I've got my eye on.
Yeah, really.
You know, maybe there are Americans running around here. Maybe I'll take someone hostage.
Tongue in cheek.
If you came here and took me as a hostage, could you write it off on your taxes, and would you split it with me?
Yeah, well, there you go. We could split the deal.
It's a legitimate business
expense.
Sounds
like a Hunter and Joe Biden deal.
That's right. It does indeed. Now, Anthony Blinken came out and made some remarks, and he said that Robert Levinson was not one of the five. I guess there were two of them. We didn't know who they were until today. Robert Levinson was not one, and he went on to say that it appears as though Levinson, I think he used the word deceased, is deceased. Certainly he has been forgotten, Abe. Is that what Israeli intelligence believes, as far as you know, that he is dead?
As far as I know, he is assumed to have passed away in Iranian custody some years ago, maybe a few years ago. I mean, I think the last time there were definite signs of life, there were a couple of photos of him, and that was back in about 2011, maybe. Mm. But he's been missing since 2007.
Right.
What bothers me here is, okay, so, your Blinken comes out and says he wasn't one of them. How about getting some details from them about what happened? That shouldn't cost you anything.
Or
if there are any goodwill gestures here, at least get something about him. Get remains
exactly.
If that's possible.
Yeah, exactly. They should have been given some remains, you know, something to have closure, at least for his family. But no, they missed that one that time, I guess. All right.
Maybe that's the next $10 billion. Maybe that's what we'll get.
Yeah. Well, when we come back, I want to talk to Abe about a new movie coming out in Israel and hopefully here in the United States as well. And then the top 50 Jews in the world as of this year, anyway, ladies and gentlemen. All that right here tonight. Abe Katzman with us. You can follow him on his website, abekatzman.com, Katzman with an S. And of course, this hour is brought to us by Proclaiming Justice to the Nations, pjtn.org. We'll be right back.
AM 950 and FM 94.9, The Answer.
Are you sick and tired of being sick and tired? Do you suffer with low energy, difficulty sleeping, digestive issues, frequent illnesses, and more? If you answered yes to any of these questions, Heiss Health Clinic is for you. Hi, this is Renee Humphreys. At Heiss Health Clinic, we use holistic methods to balance your body so it can help heal itself. Call Heiss Health Clinic at 407-677-1660 or go online to drheiss.com so we can help you experience outrageous health.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you're like me, you're probably spending more time in your vehicles, so it's more important than ever that we can rely on them. That's why if you have a Mercedes-Benz, you need to know Jerry and Janice Shepherd, because you can rely on Jerry's MB to keep your Mercedes in tip-top shape without leaving your budget out of shape. With their state-of-the-art facilities, factory-trained techs, decades of experience, and reasonable prices, Jerry's MB is your dealership alternative. Jerry's MB is located just off Alafaya Trail, just north of UCF. Give them a call at 407-366-6499 or visit them at jerrysmb.com. Remember, they're your dealership alternative. jerrysmb.com, 407-366-6499.
Folks, did you know Relax and Comfort is the only store in Florida where you can experience both the number one rated number bed and the J.D. Power number one rated mattress in America and compare them side by side? And now for a limited time, Relax and Comfort has a very special offer for American Adversaries listeners only. Get a free X2 model X chair, just like the one I use every day, with a qualifying purchase of any new luxury massage chair or smart sleep system. Call Don, Jackie, or Geo at 407-628-5657 or visit Relax and Comfort at the Winter Park Village just across from the Regal Cinemas. You can rely on Relax and Comfort for all your back care and sleep needs to sit, sleep, and feel better every day. Relax and Comfort is locally and family owned and operated since 1967. So call today at 407-628-5657 or visit relaxandcomfort.com.
Friends, Lair Adams of the American Adversaries here to remind you to call Cafe Positano's right now and ask about today's chef specials. You know they make the best pizza, strombolis, and calzones, but call ahead, the menu changes. Maybe tonight they'll have chicken with mustardella sauce, salmon in a mango citrus glaze, flounder with mushrooms and spinach in a wine reduction, or Parmesan-crusted T-bone steak. Got you drooling yet? Google it now and dine in, pick up, or have delivered Central Florida's most authentic Italian food, Cafe Positano's.
We all know we can't avoid death and taxes. Here in Florida, we also can't avoid mold, mildew, and grime building up on our homes, businesses, carports, and sidewalks. When it's time for you to tackle that dirt and grime, call Deere Brothers Exterior Cleaning, D-E-E-R-E. They do it all, from soft washing roofs to high-powered washing for those really tough jobs. No job too big or small. So when it comes time for you to deal with the mold, mildew, and grime, call Deere Brothers Exterior Cleaning at 407-978-8834. Leave the dirty work to them. 407-978-8834.
Okay, we are back. We are live. We're speaking with Abe Katzman. And Abe, we might have sold the Iranians short on those goodwill gestures. This just came across the wire.
Abe, Iran has expelled more nuclear inspectors from the U.N. after the U.S. released the $6 billion in frozen Iranian assets.
Oh, so we actually got more than five people out of Iran. We got all the nuclear inspectors.
We got at least 11.
Yes. Oh, my Lord.
They said because the U.S. was trying to use the IAEI for their own political purposes.
How about that? How dare we?
Imagine that.
Oh, gosh. All right. In the meantime, actually, there's two movies coming out. Rick and Lori just reminded me there is, Highway 60?
Highway 60.
Is coming out here in the United States. Is that coming out in Israel, too? It's about Highway 60 in Israel. And Mike Pompeo walked it with the former ambassador.
And David Friedman.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And go ahead.
I was looking to see if it's going to play here at least during the time that it's making its debut in America, and it does not seem to be.
That's today and
so,
tomorrow.
I ride on that road all the time, so I don't need to see the movie.
Yeah, but I think it'll be good for a lot of Americans though to see it. That's the whole, the point.
Christians, so. Americans,
And
so important.
It's really true. It's when I first got here, and I remember seeing that road, and that was one of the first things explained to me is that this road basically follows what was called the path of the forefathers. Mm-hmm. It was the road to Jerusalem from the area south of Jerusalem, from Hebron, from Bethlehem. That's the road, and it's been there for however many millennia.
Sometimes I think that
the last paving on it might have been done back around those times. they could use a little resurfacing in a couple of places.
All right. Well, there is a movie going to be debuting in Israel, I guess, in about a week or so, called Target Tehran, about that heist. It's being depicted as the heist where, what was it, a couple of years ago, Abe, where you were telling us about how, and this was under the previous Benjamin Netanyahu administration, how Mossad had gotten their hands on a bunch of computer information, disks, and the like from Tehran in quite an extraordinary move. But is it such a good idea to show how this was done in a movie?
Well, now, if you saw some report, I wasn't aware of a movie. I know that there is a book coming out next week.
Oh, maybe that's what it is. I'm sorry.
The question is still valid.
Right.
Whenever you're talking about real clandestine efforts, and you're trying to, the people who wrote this are known. One of them's the defense correspondent for the Jerusalem Post. Another one is a defense think tank guy. They're legitimate people, but just because you're a decent journalist in an area like this, your material is only going to be as good as your sources, or at least as good as the government and the intelligence establishment wants it to be. So you don't know quite what you're getting. I don't know if they've if they're exposing any if there are any big scoops here. But if there are, there's a pretty good chance that they're sort of planted there by the intel people. It may still be very, very good. I don't doubt it. I'd be interested in seeing it, but everything has to be taken with a little grain of salt.
I must admit that the excerpts, I guess, that I read, it sounds pretty much like a bank heist, a bank robbery. Pretty much is the way it came off to me, but it may be interesting to see when that comes out. Meanwhile, you mentioned the Jerusalem Post. They have put out their list of the top 50 Jews, which actually is about 150 Jews, because some of the, like, number three or four might be five or six of them, right? But it might be interesting.
I know, they're cheating.
Well, let's go through a couple of them, because Netanyahu comes in at number two. Sam Altman of OpenAI comes in at number one. Is AI that big a thing that...
Well, that's, again, this is the 50 most influential Jews as perceived by a handful of people who write for the Jerusalem Post magazine.
Right.
There's not a lot of science behind this.
Right.
And just as an example, I was looking, I just went online to check who they were, and I accidentally clicked on last year's list. So last year, Zelensky was number one. This he's not on the list.
Not even on the list. That's right. I did notice that the one of the categories was the protest organizers. What, they came in at like three or four, didn't they? Something like that.
Wow.
They came in pretty high up
Well,
there.
They're, they're influential. I can't argue with that.
Yep.
And I can't believe it, but I can't argue with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I should have pulled the list up before me when I went into this, but I saw George Soros was actually made one of, I think it was one of the philanthropy groups. There were several philanthropy,
philanthropic.
Thank you, that were in there as well. How long have they been putting these lists out? Do you know?
I don't know how far back it goes. Certainly 5 years, maybe 10, maybe more. But it's, one of the people who's in there among the philanthropists, I think he might have even gotten his own entry. And he's a very, very good guy, but it's really, he has a lot of influence with the Jerusalem Post.
Uh-huh.
And I think that is what landed him in, as high as he did. Other than that, he's someone. He makes a difference. He's a good guy. Like I said, he's a good guy. Very, very generous. But again, it's this is from the perspective of the Jerusalem Post newsroom.
Yeah. Well, the one guy who should have been on there, they left off, and of course that is you, Abe Katzman, because you are a big influence.
That's right.
All right. We love you so much. Once again, happy Rosh Hashanah.
Later on Monday, Lori Cardoza Moore, who is the founder of Proclaiming Justice to the Nations, spoke about the period of 10 days after Rosh Hashanah and how in that period our books of life are open.
All right. Anyway, I wanted to go back to something that that Abe and Lori mentioned earlier in the show about this period in the Jewish faith. Mm-hmm. And that is that yesterday was Rosh Hashanah. Mm-hmm. That is the Jewish New Year. By the way, the year is now 5,784.
Right.
That is the year. Mm-hmm. And this also is the period between now in Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, mm-hmm. which is known as the period of repentance.
The days of awe. Yes.
Do you explain what you mean by all that? So the 10 days.
The 10 days of awe are basically the time leading up to the 10 days of awe to Rosh Hashanah. There was a month called Elul. And the month of Elul is the time period when we are supposed to start preparing ourselves for the king. The king is coming out to the field. He wants to be close to his people. He's inviting us in to be close. This is the time of introspection. We're looking at our lives. We're considering our friendships, our relationships, our family. And are there relationships that need to be reconciled? Because God doesn't want this animosity. Rosh Hashanah is the blast of the trumpet blast. In fact, when the Messiah comes, it's going to be at this time when we hear the trumpet blast. And it talks about that in the prophets. But for this 10 days, the books are opened up. And everything that is going to be about this coming year, this is the time when we need to get right with God. We need to look at our lives again. Ask God, show me if there's any unclean way in me. Repent of our sin. Yom Kippur is actually the time when the whole nation, think about this, the whole world, every time zone on Yom Kippur will be uniting to come together to repent of our sin. This is something that Jews and Christians now, Christians are starting to participate in this holy day. It's the holiest day on the calendar because this is the time when the whole nation, when we stand before God as a people group combined and we repent of our sin. Once Yom Kippur is over, the doors, this after Yom Kippur, the books are closed, and that will be whatever has been written about each one of us is going to be what our future will hold for that coming year. So it's an important time for us, those people of faith, to, you know, be honest with ourselves, be honest before God and ask him, because really this nation is not going to change. We're going to continue to get worse and worse and worse until the Messiah comes. And we're going to need a deliverer when he arrives. That's how bad things.
And the books you're speaking of are books of our lives.
The
right?
books of our lives that right. are being written down. Those books will be open when we stand before God. When we stand at the judgment seat, that book is going to be opened up.
All right. So take that to heart, ladies and gentlemen. On Trump and Tuesday's DC Declassified with Congressman Corey Mills, Randy Ross, Mike McBath, and I asked him about the current budget battle in Congress, the border crisis, and funding for Ukraine.
He's joining us from Capitol Hill. Congressman Mills, thanks for joining us today for DC Declassified. So declassify this budget battle for us. What's happening?
Well, the bottom line is that we said back in January before the speaker's race that there are certain rules and things that we've put in place. One of those things we put in place were, you know, stuff like germaneness, things like single point appropriations, or looking at the fact that we'll get 12 appropriation bills in place, not CRs, mini buses, omnibuses, et cetera. My whole thing, I voted against the Fiscal Responsibility Act because it didn't have an actual top line spending. That's why I liked and I voted for Limit Save Grow, because it actually had a 1.471 cap. And that cap is in line, if you go back to 2019 and pre-COVID spending, it was $1.22 trillion that was spent in 2019. And if you adjusted at a 3.5% rate, that would get you to around a 1.477 for FY24, very much in line with the standard rate of inflation. I was willing to look at that, and the reason I was willing to look at that on Limit Save Grow is because it also had 23 permit reforms to include the RAINS Act that would actually stop government overreach and overregulation that would encourage and incentivize the private sector for economic growth. So there was an economic growth strategy that was involved, but there was also a clear rescission of $1.2 trillion in additional overspending that was going on. DC's problem is that they're so addicted to spending that their metric of success is not based on outcome. Their metric of success is, oh, well, we increased it by 8.3%. Oh, well, we increased, you know, veteran spending by 2.5%. Oh, that's not outcome-based. If it was outcome-based, and you told me as an example that the last 10 years we increased our VA spending by X and it's reduced our overall suicide rates by Y, I'd say, hey, how can I sign up for more to help out our veterans?
Yeah, but that's
but the
not
reality
happening.
Is yeah. that it hasn't.
All right.
And so now the leadership and others have failed to actually get the appropriation bills prepared and ready before the September 30th deadline. And here's the reality. The September 30th deadline isn't some floating holiday.
Right, well, Congressman,
this has always been the case.
All right, hold it right there. We'll take a short break. Pick it up right there when we come back. The appropriations bills haven't happened, even though Kevin McCarthy promised they would. We'll be right back with the American Adversaries on a Trump and Tuesday. And Congressman Mills, you were just telling us basically what the Republicans have not been able to accomplish, which has got us into this bind here. It's my understanding that the leadership wants to push through a continuing resolution. Where's that process, and where are you on that?
Well, I've made it very clear that I will not continue to do the status quo of D.C. That's not what I was elected to do. I'm not here to bail out leadership when they fail to get 12 appropriation bills on the floor, which is exactly what our jobs are. And if we knew that we weren't going to be able to get the 12 appropriations before September 30th, which, by the way, isn't some floating holiday, this is the time that our appropriation bills are due every single year, and their failure doesn't mean that I kick the can and continue to do status quo. So the bottom line is that I will not support a CR. I don't care if they try to call it an 8% cut. It's not. The reason it's not an 8% cut is because if you go to pre-COVID level spending, we should be at around a maximum of 3.5% adjusted rate at 1.47. I looked at the top lines. It looks like they're trying to come back at a 1.7 number, 1.8 number. That means that they are not adjusting back to what it was pre-emergency, pre-COVID. They don't have an economic growth strategy. And I found out that H.R. 1, which is the Low-Cost Energy Act that we passed out of the House, that it's not even been transmitted by leadership or by others to the Senate to even be taken up as a potential. And maybe it does die in the Senate. But the point is that I can't consider every one of my decisions on whether or not I got 61 votes in the Senate. I was elected to be one of 435 to fight for the American people for fiscal responsibility. Until we get our GDP to national debt ratio inverted, until we get on a strategy, just like you have in business. Look, I was a business owner for a long time. It's a simple math. My account payables cannot exceed my account receivables, or I am insolvent. The other way is that I know that once I get to a certain business size, I can't cut my way to profitability, the same way that this country at $33 trillion can't cut its way to prosperity. We have to actually have an economic strategy that increases our domestic production through oil and energy dominance and energy security, through onshoring jobs, to addressing workforce shortage issues, to start looking at the 70%+ that is in mandatories that need to be open, to start looking at entitlement reforms and other things that people don't want to talk about. But we also have to start talking about limited government. We talk about this idea of cutting back the weaponized DOJ. If I'm looking at the numbers under CJS, it looks like they're only looking to cut right now $5.7, $5.8 billion. That needs to be about $20 to $30 billion. We need to take massive cuts to government. We need to ensure that we have a capital plan for the American people. And we need to stop spending, because if I ask the average American right now, Chris, if you're in debt, how do you get out of that debt? I can tell you right now their answer isn't spend more.
Yeah.
And so we need to be doing better. And I'm not going to bail out anyone who has failed to bring 12 appropriations bills to the floor with an understood and agreed upon top line number. I'm not sinking and saddling Americans with additional debt so that we can become the Roman Empire, who didn't fail because of expansionism. They failed because they could no longer service their debts when they grew too large.
All right.
I want fiscal responsibility, limited government, and for Congress to do their damn job.
Well, where is the process now? Are they prepared to put a continuing resolution on the floor for a vote? Is it in committee? What sort of schedule are we looking at here?
Well, they thought that their biggest problem was a couple of outliers on this CR, and they thought that the CR could be sweetened if they added an H.R. 2, which is the Secure the Border Act, but then they negotiated against themselves before even putting it before the Democrats in the Senate and removed E-Verify from it, thereby watering and diluting down a bill that passed as a standalone, which makes no sense at all. And so the fact is that they didn't understand that a lot of us that just got voted in, a lot of us who are America First conservatives, who understand finance, who understand how to build businesses and understand market and read spreadsheets, that we wouldn't look at this and say, absolutely not. And here's the problem, Chris. If I approved even the current 12 appropriation bills at the standard inflationary rate of 1.477 as a top line number, if they don't have an economic growth strategy, we're going to be back here next year
instead of saying 1.5, it'll be 1.7. And the following year, it's 1.9. And the following year, it's 2.5.
Right.
The bottom line is that we didn't get to $33 trillion because the people who've been in Congress for 20 and 30 and 40 years had a growth strategy plan. The reality is that their only plan was to spend more. And I am not here to continue to cause inflation, which is nothing more than the invisible tax on the American people who are feeling it today every time they have to go out and buy groceries, every time they fill the gas tank, every time they're paying their mortgages or their rent. The bottom line is that we came here to make a change and to stop the D.C. dance and status quo. So I will not support a CR, but I will support a fiscally responsible 12 appropriation bills that get us to a point where we can start having real reform discussions, opening up mandatories for entitlement reform, and changing the status quo of D.C.
Congressman, and before your interview, we kind of got into a unique conversation here with our team regarding whether it makes sense to let Joe Biden continue to fall apart in front of us, in front of the cameras, in front of everything, or do we pursue these avenues of impeachment, et cetera? If you were, you know, not speaking necessarily how you're going to act upon these issues, but are we wasting time with only a year, basically, until the next election on things that we know won't pass the Senate regarding impeachment, or are we better off just to let him implode on his own?
No, I actually believe that the American people want transparency and accountability. And I think that we need to stop identifying that there's this two-tiered justice system that is driven by politics, whereby we go, oh, well, what's the point in actually holding this guy accountable when, in fact, he's not going to be here much longer anyway? If we commit a crime, if there's corruption that is involved, if we are truly committed to draining the swamp, then we have to hold people accountable, whether it's the left or the right, and we have to actually do what the American people's will is. That's part of being a representative, being a statesman, which we're supposed to be here to carry out the will of the people. So I can tell you, I am encouraged to continue to go after those who have actually violated our laws. The Biden crime family with SB 1023, the testimonies by people like Devin Archer, the blatant on record, on video Shokin approach. I mean, all of these things, if we just basically say, oh, well, it's good for us politically to let it go, then we're no better than everyone else. And the fact that we're actually doing a real investigation, it's also the same thing where they try to use a sham investigation against President Trump right before the elections to try and get his numbers. Well, this is a real investigation with real facts against the Biden administration. Let's see how they like this and hold up against it.
Yeah, Corey, another question is, every day in Ukraine, where do we, is there anybody that follows the accounting of all this money that's going over into the Ukraine, or you just send it in a, you know, a plane, say, hey, guys, just pick it up in boxes and have a good day? I mean, it seems like the craziest thing I've ever heard. No one knows where anything is.
Yeah, Congressman, I was lamenting the fact that we know much more about Burisma and Hunter than we know about what's going on right now in Ukraine as we creep toward World War III. Shouldn't we be focusing some of our attention on that?
Well, I actually helped to co-sponsor a bill by Marjorie Taylor Greene back in January to do a 100% audit on all money that's gone out the door. We know that there's been corruption that has gone on. We know that there's been money that's been siphoned off. Zelensky himself just fired six of the people that were ahead of his procurement for his defense. So he also is trying to act as if he's now trying to clean up his act. But the bottom line is, I don't give a damn about Ukraine's borders. I care about America and America's borders. I'm not elected by Zelensky. I'm elected by the American people. And I just want to go back really quick to this discussion on the fiscal responsibility. And here's the reason why I say that. The minute that I came out against the CR, against the D.C. swamp status quo, against this idea that we're going to continue to spend our way out of this gap, what do you think came out today? A push poll to many of the people in the district, asking what my performance is, asking whether or not they would vote for me again in 2024, asking about the government shutdown. And why? Because I went after the people who are the biggest perpetrators of spending, and I went after the leadership who's failed to put 12 appropriation bills on the floor and called exactly what it is. And D.C. doesn't like that. And so I can tell you right now, you guys wanted someone who would come up here and actually put a plan together, who would fight for fiscal responsibility, who would fight for limited government, who would get control over the corruption that's going on here. And now that I'm actually continuing to stay on the right side of justice, and I am on the right side of this actual no CR approval, now you're seeing where the uni party is well and alive, and they're trying to see exactly what my vulnerabilities in the district. Well, guess what? Just like I was willing to put my money where my mouth was in the last race, stand by and watch what I do this time.
Yeah, I think that's...
We love it. Corey, awesome, baby.
Corey Mills for governor.
I know. Right.
I think it was Lincoln that first said, good policy makes for good politics. So all you got to do is keep your eye on the ball. I want to go back to the budget question, because this is a continuing resolution, if I'm not mistaken, for like 30 days. And I've also seen reports that the leadership has also been working on an omnibus bill, you know, the full year spending, once again, increasing our deficit. Is that what's going on?
I can tell you right now there is no omnibus, so I will dispel that, because they know for a fact that that won't pass anywhere throughout our entire conference, even the squish who are out there who actually don't want to take a tough vote. But I can tell you, when it comes to the CR, you're exactly right. They want a 30-day resolution, which means it continues to fund the DOJ that's been weaponized that we know about, continues to fund Jack Smith and his indictments and all the rest, continues to fund the David Weisses of the world and the Merrick Garlands, yeah, and does nothing to try and get an actual resolution. And here's the problem with this. Kicking the can for 30 days because we failed to do our job, I go back to my original point. September 30th is not a floating holiday that we didn't know about. Every year, our 12 appropriation bills are due by that date. If we were not ready, just like the average American works every day, we shouldn't have taken off the entire month of August for recess. We shouldn't have taken off 2 weeks in September. And we should not leave this house. I don't care if it takes us over the weekends. I don't care if it's an all-night thing. Guess what? There's a lot of Americans who are working double and triple shifts to be able to afford to buy inflation. So we need to be here to do our job. And that's the bottom line to all of this. Congress has to, as an institution, do their damn job. They're not going to do it, then get out of the way.
I have a couple of other questions, a different subject. Have we actually found...
By the way, Chris, if you can't notice, I'm a bit hot right now.
I was going to say, I've heard the D word a couple of times in this interview.
There's been quite a bit of passion on tonight's Trumpin' Tuesday. The F-35, has that actually been accounted for? And have you been briefed on what in the world happened?
First off, I think you need to address the F-35 by its proper pronouns, missing, lost. you know, it's one of those situations where it was so funny that Derek Van Orden, who is the congressional member of Wisconsin, actually printed out lost, please call if you find me pages, and he was taping them up to the actual flagpoles and things like, or not the flagpoles, but the light poles and stuff, like it was a missing dog. My understanding is that the stealth beacon was actually activated during the ejection period. It has actually crashed and splashed down. I believe it was in South Carolina. I didn't get a brief. I've been in the actual meetings this entire time trying to find a top-line number that's appropriate. But, you know, it's one of those things where I'll continue to look at the investigation and what the report comes back. I believe it was a Marine Corps F-35, but you're still talking about an $81 million aircraft. Yeah. That went missing and is apparently splashed down at this point.
Okay. And evidently the Pentagon is either does know what happened and isn't saying, or doesn't know what happened because they are saying they don't. The Iran deal, I got to get your thoughts on the Iran deal. That was we paid for hostages, right?
$6 billion.
Right.
Well, the bottom line is, not only is this a dangerous precedent, here's what you just told all of our adversaries. You just actually attached a price tag to every American abroad to say that these Americans are worth roughly $1.2 billion each. Jeez. In addition to that, you released 5 Iranian agents for 5 Americans, plus you unfroze $6 billion in assets that was actually from the Iranian National Oil Company, who we know was continuing to fund a lot of the terroristic approaches and attacks that were going on. If you go back in history and look at the JCPOA or Resolution 2231 that Obama signed, they released a huge thing as they delivered pallets of cash and Swiss francs to Iran. And what did you see? You saw a direct correlation in the immediate uptick of attacks by the proxy militias against the West. So we know exactly what is going on here. This is not just the idea that you put a price tag, but this is actually trying to acquiesce to China, Iran, Russia, and the North Korean geopolitical alignment, while the president himself not only was disgusting that he did this, but he did it on 9/11, the 22nd anniversary of the largest terrorist attack on American soil, is when he chooses to release $6 billion to the largest state sponsor of terror, and didn't even go to the actual site where we actually had these terrorist attacks occur. First president since 9/11 who didn't go to one of these. He did a press conference from Alaska after he had praised and the G20 about how he hopes that China has a great economic, you know, growth and strategy, but didn't talk about U.S. dollar confidence for developing nations. This is the China first, America last Biden administration. This is the fiscal irresponsibility of Congress, and this is a failed institution. And guess what? I'm as pissed off as every other American, and I can tell you I'm willing to stay in Congress right now in this House and not leave until we start getting real tangible results.
Congressman, back to that very point, part of the, as I understand it, the $6 billion had to be spent on humanitarian-style aid and relief. How do we trust that a country that has one of the worst records in the world when it comes to humanitarian effort, who tracks that? Who makes sure that they spend that?
We literally had the president of Iran go on media and say, I will spend the money however I see fit. Oh, is geez. Exact quote. So we know it's not going to humanitarian. And guess what? We're utilizing Qatar as the intermediary of this, which is the same people we use for the Taliban. So they're all of this nonsense and loose-lipped rhetoric that we're washing the money and we're overseeing this, and we can't get 12 appropriation bills. What can we oversee? You know, Congress is continuing to try, and the president and others, to say that we have oversight. What we need is actual oversight. But this $6 billion, the president of Iran already said, I will spend how I see fit. So it's very clear it's not going to be used just for humanitarian purposes.
You know, I'll try to finish your day off. let's get back to the border. Has anybody ever been stopped crossing into the United States? I saw there was over 3,000 people per day for the last couple of days have crossed over. I mean, it's just the numbers are just astronomical. And, you know, the future consequences to all of us is going to be horrendous financially and who knows other ways.
Well, I'll tell you, after we found out that you're not only getting a free phone, but subsidy for your rent and things like that, I'm actually contemplating going back over and crossing illegally myself.
I know. That's what we've been planning here. You know?
Jeez.
Isn't that unbelievable?
It is absurd. Congressman, how can our listeners help you?
You know, I want everyone that's listening to know that the reason that D.C., the Swamp, and the Uni Party will come after me is because I'm sitting here defending you. I'm doing exactly what I promised on the campaign trail. I'm looking at actually holding accountable D.C., whether it was the right or the left who's responsible for the failures. And I want you to know that if they continue to ramp up their attacks against me, it's only because I'm willing to defend you. Go to my website. Make sure that you sponsor and support us. We need to stay in this fight because what they're understanding is they're losing ground, and that's because the we the people has stopped being the silent majority.
What's the website?
It's going to be millsforflorida.com.
Millsforflorida.com. Well, Congressman Mills, thanks so much for taking time out of this busy afternoon up there on Capitol Hill. But keep fighting like you're doing, because that is why we put you up there. And you're coming through in a big way.
I won't stop the fight. They won't terrify me or scare me away. Trust me, I've had a lot worse. No one's shooting at me yet.
Okay. Thank God.
All right. You know, Chris, you'll probably have to stop down at Cafe Milano for a taste.
Yeah. All right.
John, I appreciate you always giving me this opportunity. God bless you guys, and I'll continue to fight, and God bless this great nation.
Thank you,
we'll talk to you soon. Thank you so very much.
Earlier on Trump and Tuesday, I try to explain to my colleagues in a sometimes spirited conversation why I believe it to be a folly to try to impeach Joe Biden.
A couple of other things that happened today, real quickly. This is voter registration day.
It's National Voter Registration Day. And again, we talked about the difference between Republicans and Democrats all throughout my social media, whether it's on political pages, Fox, et cetera. Democrats are making this huge plea to remind people to do that. What people need to understand, especially here in Florida and in Orange County, City of Orlando, if you do not request a mail-in ballot, the new legislation that took place this last cycle, you will not get one. You will have to go vote in person. Right. So you have time still to go to request your mail-in ballot. So you need to go do it.
And they'll go out soon, too.
Soon, 2 weeks.
This is National Voter Registration Day.
Right.
Has anybody ever seen an ad on TV about that?
No, but the Democrats are
the
working
Democrats
hard
are
at
creating.
It.
The Democrats are creating. Yes,
but that's
they
what
are.
I'm getting at.
In
we
Pennsylvania,
haven't seen it. Yeah.
They just approved, and Barack Obama congratulated them today.
I'm sure he would.
Today of all days, of course.
Of course.
They just approved automatic voter registration when you register
immediately
the driver's license.
Yeah, it's just bang, bang.
Right.
Oh,
right.
Geez.
Now,
that's
in the state
terrible.
Of Florida, they offer it to you.
Yeah.
And they ask you if you want to, and they ask you what affiliation if you want to. But this will be done automatically.
That's
just
wrong.
You will automatically be registered to vote, non-party affiliation.
Now, do you have to prove you're a citizen?
Nope. All you have to do is be able to get a driver's license.
So if I can get a driver, did you see, like, what was it, yesterday, 2,500 of them crossed in like 10 minutes down in the border?
Now, I do not know what the rules in Pennsylvania are to get a driver's license. Yeah. Hopefully, illegals can't get driver's license. But by the way, it took an act of the Florida legislature in this past legislative session to ban illegals in the state of Florida from getting a Florida driver's license.
Yeah. See what I mean?
Right.
How about if that... I wonder how many states the illegals can get licensed and then automatically you're registered.
California, for one.
I mean, can you imagine the deficit that we're having to fix when it comes to the voter registration process?
So much work lies ahead for the Republicans.
Right. Yep. And, of course, they're pushing not only the voter registration, automatic mass voter registration, but they also want to have no photo ID, no serious form of ID when you do go to vote, which, of course—
I mean, how can anybody sense go, geez, that's a good idea?
Because there's so little of that around.
They want to leave the hole of opportunity.
We all know that's horrendous.
Once again, if somebody can be convinced that a guy, whether he's faking it or not, like Fetterman, deserves to be in the Senate, they can be convinced of a whole lot of other nonsense,
I know,
right?
That's what they work off
right.
of. Right,
exactly.
Oh, boy.
Because, once again, the Democrats innately understand that politics is driven by emotion and not reason.
Yeah. To our listeners that are out there, grab a pen. I'm going to give you the number to call, at least if you live in Orange County, to request your mail-by-phone ballot. I'll say it twice. The phone number is 407-836-8683. Again, that phone number is 407-836-8683. And even though you've gotten them in the past, if you do not request one this cycle, you will not be given one.
And that will go forward each cycle.
That's correct.
You'll have to request it each time.
So you have to rule.
I think it's a great rule.
Yeah, that's
absolutely.
A good rule.
But it's new, so a lot of people aren't familiar.
They're unaware.
With
They're
it.
Just used to getting them in the mail.
Automatically, right. That will no longer happen here in the state of Florida. So, yeah, the Democrats, once again, they typically have the better ground game, and when they do, they make gains. And that's what they have done in Pennsylvania.
So, Chris, I can, in California, just be, I cross the border, I get a license.
You're registered to vote. Now, it's up to the voting supervisors to eliminate you from the rolls, but they first have to verify who you are and that you're not in the country legally. So how vigorous do you think they're going to do that?
But run by Democrats? Not at all.
Right.
They'll be encouraging people to be exact.
Exactly. Right.
Boy, what a sham that is.
Yeah, right.
This is a big problem.
That's why voter integrity is under attack.
Yeah,
it's so difficult.
Without a doubt.
That's right. And Biden wants the world and us to believe that he's a champion of democracy.
Of the little people.
Right.
Come on, Chris. He's
but once again,
Scranton, PA.
Right. Right.
He's
so,
such a loser.
He is a loser, which is why I don't want him going anywhere, and I don't want to help him at all.
I know.
And I don't want to help the Democrats. He's their problem. Let them deal with it.
No.
That doesn't mean we don't do investigations and find stuff out, but... If anybody thinks they're going to run him out of office, that ain't going to happen. All they're going to do is run him into the arms of the Democrats.
No, actually, we should hope that he runs.
See, I just I have a different opinion there because, you know, like I said, my mom sometimes has The View on. And every single day when that Sonny Halston speaks, she goes, the twice impeached, and they love harping on the fact that even though they impeached him under the wrong terms.
Right.
They don't care.
I know.
And so you've got Republicans out there that have become MPAs because they're sick and tired of Republicans not having a backbone. And you want me to believe we're not supposed to go after Biden?
We go after Biden in the right way. And the right way is to defeat him at the polls and to defeat him at the polls soundly. That is where we need to find our retribution. That is where, you know, how do they say it? Vengeance is best served
vengeance
cold.
Is right,
revenge
is best
that.
Served
say,
up cold.
I love that.
Okay.
Sometimes revenge is best served cold.
Right. Because what will hurt him the most is losing at the polls.
But Chris, when you talk to people on the street and they say they think Trump did this bad, this bad, this bad, this bad, everything they've listened to in the media, if we don't get to publicly try some of these issues, how are we actually going to be able to say Trump is okay, Trump is good, Trump is right? Just because we have a delirious president doesn't mean we shouldn't go after him if he did something wrong.
A third of the American public is unreachable. Okay? They will always believe that now. They will not ever change their mind. And it will not matter how much evidence you put in front of them. They will simply continue to do that. The View, you're not going to change these people. It's a waste of time to think that you will. We have to go to the minds that we can affect, the minds that we can change.
That's where your youth lies.
That's
and
right.
That's why we need to take control of education.
That's
you know,
right.
And start it from the beginning.
Exactly.
Just like the Democrats have been doing very successfully, unfortunately.
Look, the way I see it, next year we have a great opportunity to have a massive victory. Mm-hmm. But it is not at all guaranteed, and it could go sour in a big way as well. And so I don't want to make it any easier for the other side than it's already going to be for them, because they're going to cheat and they're going to do whatever.
But Chris,
and to me, not once again, I'm the political mad scientist here.
Right.
All right, and my feeling is that if the Republicans actually impeach, now impeachment inquiry is one thing, investigations is one thing. I'm not mm-hmm. saying they shouldn't do that. Although I'd like to see a lot more investigating of what's going on now in Ukraine than what went on then, but to take it to an impeachment process itself is a losing proposition because he's going to win. And when he wins that, he will be held up as this great victor who vanquished. Everybody thought he was too old. Oh, look at Joe Biden. He's got new life. I do not want to give Joe Biden new life. I want to whip his butt at the poll, and I want to whip him as bad as he can be beat. I want him to go to his grave angry that the American public rejected him.
Look at the other side of this for a second. Let's say we get Trump reelected. Don't you think they're immediately going to come after him again?
Of course.
So to the people out there that aren't as, you know, astute when it comes to understanding these processes, how do you say to them, you don't fight, you don't want to see us fight? Because that's one of the biggest things I hear from Republicans all the time. They think we're spineless and weak and we don't fight hard enough.
I'm saying let's fight smartly. We can fight as guerrilla warriors, or we can just march right like the Ukrainians march right into their fire.
Well, don't you think, Charlie, we could take Hunter out as a token? Because I don't know if that's going to reflect everybody get upset because it's Hunter. He'd be a good one. We got to show that we did something.
True.
Something.
True.
Anything.
Okay, so we got to throw some red meat.
Yeah, that's
okay.
What I mean. He'd be a good piece, and he deserves it.
Once again, if we think that taking Joe Biden through the impeachment process is going to help Republicans, we're mistaken. It will help Joe Biden. Every president that's been impeached saw his poll numbers go up amongst his supporters.
I don't agree with you.
Bill Clinton had his highest numbers when he was impeached.
Think about something. The difference between the Russia collusion impeachment process of Trump that we eventually learned was false, right?
Yeah.
What we're going to learn in the Biden situation, it's not false. I think impeachment has been overused, overdramatized. It's thrown around like, you know, noodles on the wall. I also think that American people kind of want us to fight a little harder.
Would you rather see us win in a budget battle, or would you rather see us win there? See, the fighting needs to be going on right now about this budget.
I want it all. I want it all.
Okay,
and
I understand
want
that.
Put away
but
too.
We get it all next November 5th, 2024. Yeah. And if we play it out too quickly, we risk losing that. And once again, Joe Biden being in a weakened position is our best chance at not just victory, but at a massive victory.
Yeah, but to Mike's
point,
that it keeps making
anything to strengthen his position, and handing him an impeachment victory will do just that.
But to Mike's point, do we wait till we go to war before we have such a dilapidated country that all of a sudden he can put some type of mandates where we don't have elections different things?
That's in part what is happening right now in Congress with the arguments over like another $24 billion to Ukraine. See, when it comes to Ukraine, the left and Biden are only about 60% of the problem. The other 40% are Republicans in Congress and presidential candidates from Nikki Haley to Mike Pence to pretty much all of them except Ramaswamy. And I don't know what the hell DeSantis's position is on it anymore. I don't know that he ever actually had a position on it. Right? So
I think he's regretting. By the way, I was interviewed by the Orlando Sentinel today. There's an article coming out this week on the difference between DeSantis is support in the beginning for DeSantis versus support now. Your point is exactly what I kind of said in my interview. He doesn't have any real positions. Everything he has, he's borrowing from Trump.
Or somebody else.
Somebody else, exactly.
Right. And it's that's a problem for his campaign. It's also a problem for Republicans. Because as we're going through this process, we're spinning our wheels while we're creeping toward World War III, while the Democrats are consolidating.
I mean, doesn't it concern you about a weakened country like we are, military-wise, economic like we are, everything else, that I know we got to go to the end, but the end may be pretty
late. Well, I was telling some folks over the weekend, because you keep predicting the grid's going to go down. You had what happened in Las Vegas with the various casinos going down. Over the weekend, I got a notice from my bank, and my bank is based out of Canada, so you've got a couple of other banks locally, whether it was Regions or Bank of America, sending notices out. You're going to be offline for a couple of hours. Obviously, even today, we saw that there was another breach of something or other. Well, it's like, I think that we're really in trouble here. And I think that instead of us worrying about whether we can beat him at the ballot box, something's going to happen before we get to the ballot box.
We got to get everybody, though, doing their part. Well, I mean, we got to really tighten up the ship.
Let me just tell you something, though. Presuming you're correct, and let's say for a moment we're in the middle of an impeachment process, how do you think the media is going to portray that? These Republicans have brought this on because this has been a huge distraction from poor old Joe Biden, who's trying to bring democracy and peace and save the planet. You see, they already got their storylines ready to go, you see? So I just don't want to walk into any of their booby traps. All right, let's get Jan's phone call. Jan, how are you doing tonight? Thank you for calling.
Hi, Chris. I'm really enjoying this last debate.
Good.
I just want to tell you, I'm pretending like I can read McCarthy's mind. I don't think they intend to impeach. I think they just intend to drag this inquiry out because nobody wants Kamala Harris to be president.
Well,
they can drag this inquiry out until then they can keep just pulling out new evidence, and that's what I think McCarthy has in his head.
Well, I think you're right, and I think that's a smart strategy. And it might also be smart for him not to reveal his hand that's what he's doing. But there is, to Randy's point, though, there is a lot of people out there who are unsettled, not thinking that the Republicans are fighting hard enough. So he's in a very tricky situation, but it's a situation of their own making. And so, but I hope you're right, because that would be the smart strategy. Is to weaken him with the knowledge, but don't then give him the political victory, because that is surely what he would get in an all-out impeachment fight. And,
right.
And I don't think that, as a matter of fact, I think the Republican argument would be better that, look, we want to let the voters decide. You know, we're the true vanguards, the guardians of democracy, not the left, because that's part of their argument here, you see. And that's also going to be part of their argument when it comes to the other major issues, including abortion. All right. Well, thank you so very much, Jan. Appreciate you being out there.
Thank you for the debate.
Okay. You got it.
Well, that was one of the questions the Sentinel asked me today. Yeah. Did Trump is now, do you think he's trying to come more moderate in his opinion regarding abortion? No, Trump never changed.
No.
The only person that changed was Ron DeSantis.
Yeah.
And he went so far right that he alienated, and he's seeking a national audience. Listen, I'm pro-life. I'm not trying to say we should allow abortion. There are circumstances, I'm on record saying, under certain situations, whether it's rape, incest, life of the mother, I'm a little different in that space. But I will say that Ron DeSantis' desire to take it to 6 weeks, while some of the pro-life people celebrate that, it has totally made him an unelectable person for national office.
The other thing, too, we're getting like so personal. Right. When you vote, what do I vote for? I vote for the ideology of the party. I don't care who the guy is as president.
Right.
I vote for lower taxes. I vote for a strong military. You know, I vote for opportunity for all. Now, Joe Biden just happens to be there, a total loser. You know what I mean? But do I really have to put up with the personality of him and let that influence what I want as an American person?
Well, see, but once
low
again,
taxes, strong military. You see what I mean?
Well, you know, we only have
a
year.
I know what you're saying, because the personality is the acting part that reflects back into, we'll call it, the professional wrestling game.
Yeah.
But it influences the people not doing what they should do when they vote by going down a mental list of what's best for them.
And I want to say something, Chris, if I can, if you don't mind. Yeah. The show has been around how long now?
13 years.
13 years.
Come on, Randy.
I came on. Listen, I'm getting making a point I made to the Sentinel today.
Yeah.
I came into this process in 2015 as his chairman. We've been around this now as a team, as a radio family, for 8 years.
Yeah.
So how in the world... That's what I said to Steve Limangelo. How in the world do you think we're going to step away from that loyalty that we have invested in Trump to take a chance on someone that had Bush in behind him clapping as if he had just won the Super Bowl, which I said to you offline. Yeah. That's not going to happen, and therein lies the challenge.
Yeah, he is. DeSantis has got himself in let's just say he's
a quagmire, as I call it.
In a sticky thicket. Or a sticky
he's in a real quagmire.
That's right.